Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart, the most listened to internet radio show in the nonprofit sector, dedicated to helping your charity succeed. It's no secret that combining online and offline techniques is the key to modern day fundraising success, and practical advice is what you need. The Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart is the perfect landing point to learn from experts around the world who provide advice you can use. Ted Hart is without a doubt one of the foremost nonprofit thought leaders, also a successful author. His books range from successful online fundraising to the use of social media and how to make your nonprofit green. Guests on the Nonprofit Coach are leaders in their field who share tips and trade secrets for nonprofit management and fundraising success. Ted lectures around the world, but now he's here for you. From the latest in charity news, technology, fundraising, and social networking, Ted and his guests help you and your organization move to greater levels of efficiency and fundraising success. This is a live call-in show. Add your voice by calling 347-324-3080. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at tedhart.com. Click on Radio. Don't forget to dial 347-324-3080. Now, welcome the host of the Nonprofit Coach, Ted Hart.
And welcome to this latest edition of the Nonprofit Coach. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have a very important show for you today, and that is that we're going to be celebrating. We're going to be celebrating the 2015 AFP Research Prize. We're going to share with you in a moment who the winners were and talk throughout this entire show about the important body of work that they have brought together. First up here on the show, as the announcer mentioned, this is a live call-in show, so you're welcome to call in at 347-324-3080. You can also ask questions over in the chat room. I see some folks over in the chat room. Feel free to ask questions there. Or you can email me your questions today for our page to expert. At tedhart@tedhart.com. As always, we start the show with page one news. The first up here on page one news is to just make note that at tedhart.com you can find all of our podcasts, and in particular, the podcast of last week's big fifth anniversary show, if you can believe it. One of the top shows. And I apologize. I was just... And my apologies, we had a little technical problem here in the studio, but I'm live back here on the Nonprofit Coach. This is Ted Hart, your host. So I was just making note of the big fifth anniversary show, which is available over in the podcast at tedhart.com. And I'm going to be sharing with you a little bit later on in the show some of our upcoming guests between now and the end of the first part of this year's live shows. And then, as always, mark your calendars. We do take July and August off here on the Nonprofit Coach, and that's because we figure you've got lots more important things to do, including downloading and taking our free podcasts available to you on your iPhone, iPad, or any other device. You'll be able to listen to those at the beach and get caught up on the very best of the advisors and experts that we bring to you here on the Nonprofit Coach. With that, we're going to get right over to page two because we've got a lot to share with you today. It is my pleasure to welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach, Penelope Cagney. She's the president of the Cagney Company and has more than 25 years international experience as a consultant specializing in governance, strategic planning, and fundraising. From her firm, they have helped many clients to raise more than $1 billion. Now, today we're celebrating the important work of Penelope Cagney and her co-editor of this terrific new book, Global Fundraising. Her co-editor was Bernard Ross. They have a number of very well-placed expert authors that helped contribute to this book. And today we are celebrating the fact that they have just been awarded the 2015 AFP Skystone Ryan Partners Award in research. And this is a winner at the international level at the AFP International Conference. They received their award in Baltimore just last month. So welcome here to the Nonprofit Coach, Penelope Cagney.
Oh, thanks, Ted. Thank you for having me on the show. And
my apologies for a little bit of technical difficulties earlier on, but I'm glad that you and I are connected. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
Oh, and just wanted to say we're absolutely delighted to be on your show. My representing the 23 authors who also participated in this project, and very happy to be here and to talk about global fundraising.
Yeah, it's. I have to say, Penelope, this is had to have been quite an undertaking. It's quite ambitious. You cover the entire world. Just to share with the readers as they are racing over to Amazon to purchase your book, Global Fundraising: How the World is Changing. In this book, you cover the entire planet. So I'm just looking at the table of contents. You cover China and Japan, of course, two very important parts of the world, but Latin America, Western Europe, North America, Australia, New Zealand, Central and Eastern Europe, Africa, Middle East and North Africa, Asia and India. So you've carved out certain areas that, of course, have very high population and a growing middle class, growing number of philanthropists. But let's go all the way back to the genesis of this book. What was the first idea? I'm gathering that you and Bernard got together and saw that there was a need for sort of documenting and pulling together this wealth of information, but that had to be daunting even in its early days.
Well, actually, it was an idea of the AFP Book Advisory Committee. So I chair the International Development Committee for AFP, and I was a member of that committee at the time. And Ben Moeller, one of the committee members, came into our meeting and said that they were looking for someone to write a book on global fundraising because AFP recognized the importance of the topic. So knowing that I wouldn't be able to undertake such a monumental task by myself, I connected with Bernard Ross at the Management Center in the UK, and we invited a couple dozen other people because it is such a monumental undertaking and such a broad topic to cover.
How long did it take to bring this together?
Well, I think it was about 6 months to a year. So there was the initial.
That's quite fast for something of this magnitude.
Right. Well, we worked very hard on it, and we also had people, obviously writing chapters simultaneously. So that hurried things along, but actually came together much more easily than we thought, and we didn't even actually. We weren't actually sure that it would ever come together. It's true.
Right.
And at a certain point, you were asking yourself, do we have a book? So, it was at a certain point we felt we had substance and we were confident we were actually going to have something to deliver to Wiley and AFP. But first it was a matter of identifying what areas should be covered and then finding the right people to write the various chapters.
Well, and finding the right people, I mean, you really reached into the higher echelons of international advisors on these topics, looking down through the authors that you've selected for this book. It's literally a who's who around the world.
Yes, it is. We were very careful, and we Bernard has many great contacts around the world, as do I, and we were very selective about who we chose because we wanted to make sure that we had people who truly had in-depth knowledge of what was going on in the country or the region, and sophistication and expertise in fundraising. So we really tried to find the best people possible.
Now, in each of the chapters, you provide a breakdown of sort of the legal structure and then take a look at what individuals are doing with some examples. Did the author that you chose, were they responsible for pulling all this together, or were there sort of committees or groups within each part of the world that pull? Because there's a wealth of information. It's just incredible what you pull together here.
Yes, well, it is important to have to reference that structure to understand philanthropy and fundraising in any particular area. And what we did was we provided each author with a guideline, a sort of an outline of what to include in the chapter. But we didn't want to be too rigid about it because we find that doing anything globally, rigidity doesn't work. So we said, here are some things that we would like to include, just so we have some consistency across chapters and some necessary information. So we provided them with some guidelines, and some of them worked with others. Some chapters were co-authored, for instance. But we basically left it up to them to outline that. And, you know, I did some fact-checking and, you know, just as part of editing the book.
We
relied on each of the authors to provide that. And it's already changing. I would just saw something yesterday that in China, it's probably going to be easier to register as an NGO than in the past. So that's going to open up a lot of doors. Because one of the things we talked about in China is it's very difficult to register.
Well, and you have so much of a blurring between government and the NGO sector, and so that's a complication in China as well. So part of what you're sharing is sort of what you see coming in addition to what is the current state?
Yes. Well, we talked about the trends, and the trends are going to continue for some time. But what is happening in each country... the substance of it, most of it has remained the same, but some of the legalities are changing in countries probably as we speak. So laws are changing, and philanthropy is becoming easier in most instances, but not in every country.
Right. Recent changes in Mexico for anti-money laundering, for instance, is a change that's relatively recent, which would affect the movement of money. So that sort of thing that you're talking about, that it's ever changing.
Yes.
So again, going back to sort of the genesis, because I do want to get into the specifics and talk about what were the trends that you saw or expected to find as you were developing the book with so many authors around a very big planet that then changed, or did it bear out to your original thinking?
It pretty much... the trends that we identified were pretty broad, and what we found pretty much supported the trends that we had identified. So there weren't any huge surprises. There were some surprises from country to country, but nothing major that crossed all borders.
As some of the trends, because a lot of areas of the world, cross-border giving is really not possible. So most of what you're, in terms of sending money outside of some of these countries, so most of what you're talking about is the structure within these countries and what is going on philanthropically within these countries.
Correct. Like, for instance, in India, it's more difficult to give outside of India.
Right, to move money outside. Of course, the new CSR law just is changing the entire landscape of business and corporate giving in India. So in working,
exciting.
Yeah, well, yes and no. I you know, my personal view is I'm never a fan of setting a standard of that sort because it very quickly becomes the ceiling and not the floor. And so everybody's racing to meet a number as opposed to just promoting philanthropy and looking to grow beyond a particular number. But looking at, again, those trends in the authors, was there feedback that they were not able to fit within the framework that you were talking about? Or as you said, you gave a lot of flexibility. Did you find that each of the chapters began reflecting a particular culture?
They all reference culture at some point, and as I said again, the outline that we gave them was loose, so they organized it in terms of their particular style and what they saw as priorities. They all made some reference to the religious and philosophical underpinning of their particular culture, which I thought was quite interesting.
How I want to sort of come back to, because I don't want to get into all the trends, because I think the key trends that came out of the book is one of the more fascinating aspects of the book. But talk specifically about the role of religion and what parts of the world you feel that is of predominance, and are there other parts of the world where it might be more secular?
Well, I think that it's important everywhere. And I think that, you know, religion, I believe that religion forms the basis of the origins of philanthropy in any culture that I can think of. There, you know, in the more westernized secular cultures like Europe and North, you know, and the U.S., North America, probably a bit less so, but, you know, if you look at the Giving USA statistics, religion still claims a very large part of our philanthropic giving here in the U.S. But, you know, in some parts of the world, the Middle East and North Africa, Islam plays an important part. Africa has its own religious traditions, which are important, Ubuntu, and in other parts of the world, Buddhism also plays a role. So there's, you know, in most, in many parts of the world, religion still plays a very important role in giving and certainly forms the basis of the philosophical philanthropic thinking around philanthropy.
So in terms of the philosophy that underpins giving, you feel that religion plays a strong role wherever that may be. But is it the driving force of philanthropy around the world? I mean, is philanthropy basically religious-based?
I don't think it's religious-based. I don't think that is the driving force. I think that need is the driving force. I think that we all...
Empathy.
Yeah. I think that, you know, whether you believe, whatever you believe or whatever you don't believe, we can all look around, we can look around us and see where the need is. And we all have, there's something within us, I believe, that makes us want to give to better the
to
world.
To improve our own communities.
Suffering.
Right.
Yeah.
To improve our own communities, to alleviate. In other words, we are connected to the world that whatever our surroundings may be, and regardless of culture, you live there and you see people who live there and you see need in those areas. And so that is sort of, it's purely human.
The philanthropic impulse is purely human, whatever you believe.
Yeah, I would very much tend to agree with you. We're going to take a very, very quick break with just a little bit of an update on some information available for nonprofits over on Google. When we come back, I want to get into this very meaty topic of the key trends overall of the book. And I know some of those trends are going to be specific to regions of the world, but I think that really is one of the biggest contributors for anyone who is thinking globally. And the real power behind this book. So we will be right back with Penelope Cagney.
Life gets busy. Wouldn't it be nice to have a central place where you could save what's on your mind? With Google Keep, you can stay on top of your world by quickly and easily organizing everything you want to remember. No matter where you are,
finalize door list for Thursday's gig.
So when you find inspiration, you can file away your ideas. And Google Keep stores them safely across all your devices. And when the time comes, you'll have everything covered. Save what's on your mind. Google Keep.
And we are live back here with Penelope Cagney. Our topic today is global fundraising, and we are also celebrating the book of the same topic that she co-edited with Bernard Ross. I want to get in to this, Penelope, on the key trends overall of the book and how that relates either regionally or are there any truly global trends?
Well, we believe that there are some trends which are affecting us now and which will continue to do so into the foreseeable future. And one is the growth of great wealth everywhere around the world, and it is shifting east from the west, and wealth is growing faster in emerging newer economies than it is in the old world of Europe and North America. So economies as a whole are improving. And not only that, wealth is shifting. Ultra-high net worth individuals, that is those with $50 million in assets or more, they're going to be living in Singapore in 10 years or other places in the East, in India or China. So we're going to be seeing wealth moving towards the East, and I think that that is a real change. There's also nonprofit innovation, which is emerging everywhere. So it's not just coming from the U.S. or from Europe. It is bubbling up everywhere around the world. So fundraisers and other nonprofit professionals need to be paying attention. And there are the growth of the sector is accelerating everywhere, but there are also some INGOs which are emerging. So the NGO sector has been the fastest growing sector in the last couple of decades, but the INGOs within that sector, so the giants like World Vision or Greenpeace, are growing even faster. So as global philanthropy grows, there are some very interesting large nonprofits that are global in their character, in their work, in their mission, which are interesting, and we need to be paying attention to them. Also, there are fundraising is becoming more professional, social technology is important, and philanthropy is thriving best where there are civil structures in place and regulations for nonprofit agencies. So you need to have certain things in place in order for philanthropy to thrive. So that is one of the reasons why we paid particular attention to that in the book, because without those structures in place, without tax incentives and ease of registration and nonprofit education, nonprofit management education, and fundraising associations and those things in place, it's rather difficult for philanthropy to flourish.
Does philanthropy matter to this this growing super wealthy class? Is it
yes,
part
it
of
does.
Their DNA?
Well, as they have. I believe they have the same philanthropic impulse that we all have. I think we share that. I think, like all of us, some of them share it to more or less degrees than others. But I do believe it's important to them. And, we've seen it with philanthrocapitalism. We've seen it with the Giving Pledge and the more proactive donors that, have been stepping up, that they are more proactive in terms of their philanthropy. And they would like to see the impact that it makes. But they are, I'd say, you know, maybe, you know, it's difficult to say. I've never seen a direct comparison of that would make sense to me in terms of measuring the generosity. I mean, philanthropy is growing, and we're seeing more of it around the world. So in that respect, yes. So more people.
I'm just wondering on the global. Again, your book and the folks that you brought together are some of the experts in this area. I'm just wondering if there's a connection between the rise of the super wealthy and the trend that you're seeing in terms of the growth of global charities that seem to be growing and doing well. Are they favored by, for instance, by the super wealthy because they are global? Or is giving still local?
Well, I think it's always going to be both, because you know, it's the Gates Foundation. If you look at the Gates Foundation, I mean, it's one of the most best known global foundations, but it still gives locally for education in the U.S. for, in particular, where they have their headquarters, Seattle. So it will always be local to the extent that we can see it. Wherever we can see need, we tend to respond to it. But because these individuals have, you know, they're educated around the world, they have multiple houses around the world, their companies are global, they're more global in their outlook. So I think that they are giving more globally than they have in the past. So, for instance, the Gates Foundation pledged $10 billion for vaccine development over 10 years. I mean, that's not the U.S., that's the world.
Mm-hmm.
And we're even seeing it, you know, and it's not just U.S. donors, of course. Ronnie and Gerald Chan, their Morningside Foundation, last fall gave $350 million to the Harvard School of Public Health. That is the largest gift that Harvard has ever received. So it works both ways.
So, but for smaller nonprofits that are looking to compete in this marketplace, is there a global role for smaller nonprofits, or is again their focus just to be local?
Well, you know, on my way back from the AFP conference last week, I sat next to a fundraiser for a Silicon Valley museum. And she was bemoaning the fact that they're all, you know, technology, you know, large technology company executives. She was bemoaning the fact that one of her donors left because they said that they weren't more global. I mean, and this organization is in a location where there are many global companies, and they actually have a global taste to the particular type of work that the museum showcases. Absolutely. I mean, they just haven't tuned their taste to reflect a global focus. And even people who live in, you know, the heartland of the U.S., you know, we're all living in more global communities. You know, we all deal with many more diverse kinds of people, kinds of thinking, ways of acting philanthropically than we have in the past. So even if our focus is no further than the outskirts of our hometown, we need to be paying attention because we have so much to learn from what's going on outside, and also because wherever we are dealing with more different kinds of people with different beliefs and backgrounds and behaviors.
Is that hard for nonprofits to have that more global view when perhaps they weren't founded with that perspective? Or is that just part of being a professional?
I think that's, you know, I think that perhaps we're, I hate to criticize my own sector, but I think we're perhaps a little slower than, say, the corporate sector to recognize both the benefits and the potential dangers in the situation, which is changing so rapidly. You know, if for any nonprofit I'm associated with, I'm looking for any possible connection to the East for the future, because that is where the wealth is going to be.
So building ties now may bear fruit later?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, some nonprofits have always been more sort of global in nature. Some of the larger universities, some cultural organizations and health organizations. But I would urge every fundraiser, every nonprofit professional to take a really hard look at the global context of their work.
Or to find one.
Yes, or to find
one. To create one, or, yeah, to find one, because you may never have thought of yourself in quite that way.
But I think in many cases there is one.
Or that's through associations, or that's through thinking of how do you combine forces on similar causes and create a greater good than just your local group. And so I'm just wondering, and I'm sort of probing here a little bit, is that one of the trends that you see in terms of the growth of wealth and where wealth will be located, that being purely local may have a ceiling to it? And the
yes.
ability to grow may be stunted by not understanding that global is for real.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And even not just in terms of financial growth, but in terms of if you're not willing to look outside for ideas and for what's happening elsewhere, to learn from what others are doing, you're going to suffer. You are going to be stunted in your ability to grow, not just your financial capacity, but your capacity to have impact if you're not paying attention. Because if you're a food bank in some particular city, you know, your geographic scope may be limited, but the ideas that you can get from how people are being fed around the world, you know, they're huge. I mean, there's a huge resource outside our own borders.
So learning from others, which is, of course, the focus of this book, is to give you the opportunity to learn from those who are experts around the world. You brought up, I think, a very important point when you were going through sort of these truly global trends that I want to explore. Again, we're going to come back right after this break. But the area of impact and showing impact and the role of philanthropists pushing the notion of measuring and understanding impact and where that puts us as a sector and where that puts nonprofits for their capacity to grow and to succeed is what I'd like to explore when we come right back.
Does your organization have a compelling story to tell? Do you want to connect with your supporters, volunteers, and donors but don't have the funds to launch expensive outreach campaigns? The YouTube Nonprofit Program can help.
If I could give one piece of advice, it would be sign up for the YouTube Nonprofit Program. If I could give another piece of advice, it would just be to capture the story of your organization and use video to tell it, because video is the most powerful medium by far.
The Nonprofit Program helps you use YouTube as a powerful fundraising tool for your organization.
In one weekend, we managed to raise enough to feed 500,000 children at school for one day. The video also gained over 500,000 views and had thousands of comments.
And tell stories that haven't been told.
Because you guys, the YouTube community, started sharing these videos, there's been housing programs started and feeding programs started. Literally, homeless people that were sleeping outside slept inside last night because of you guys.
Over 10,000 nonprofits are already using YouTube's premium tools for nonprofits. Your organization can too. Learn more and apply at www.youtube.com/nonprofits.
And we're back here live here on the Nonprofit Coach with Penelope Cagney and her wonderful co-edited book with Bernard Ross, Global Fundraising. And now, Penelope, I chose that particular clip from the YouTube Nonprofit Program specifically because it speaks to measuring and telling the story of impact that philanthropy looks like or has been for a number of years, moving in the direction of being more than just giving money to great causes or entrusting money with nonprofits that will go and do great things. But philanthropists want more. They're demanding more. What is that more, and why did you identify this as a global trend?
Well, the more that they want to see evidence of their philanthropy, you know, of the results of their philanthropy. So in the past, they give money to organizations, and it's less true. Today, they give more to causes. So, for instance, the pledge that the Gates has made for vaccine development, that $10 billion pledge, was not pledged to an organization. It was pledged to a cause. So they're less interested in organizations than they have in the past, but more interested in causes, and they want to see results, and they want to see it see them as quickly as possible. And they will, in some cases where they have the capacity, they may develop their own, devote their own resources to doing this. So rather than entrusting it to some, you know, intermediary like a nonprofit, they are doing some of this work themselves. So they're being more selective. They want to see results, and so of course we all have to take this into consideration when we are looking to communicate with them.
Well, and how do you do that? Because this is increasingly, particularly for very wealthy philanthropists who I would dare say probably have or feel that they have more options or can demand more in a relationship to the large dollar philanthropy that they're able to move around the world, that the impact measurement may be something that's beyond the nonprofit's capacity.
Well, and I would also say sometimes I think we've gone a little too far with the, I mean, I think impact measurement is great. I think that we should be looking hard at what we accomplish. Sometimes I think we've gone a little bit too far because some things are harder to measure. So there may be instances where it's harder to make that case, and there are some nonprofits which have less capacity than others to devote to, say, collecting data for that purpose. But I think that there are even a small nonprofit, I think, can find some tools to measure what they're doing. I mean, something that they can afford, something that they have the capacity in terms of their workforce to carry out. So I think it's possible to do some measurement, whoever you are and whatever you're doing. But some are going to be more successful because of the nature of what they do. You know, for instance, a university or a food bank, I mean, they can point, or a health organization, I mean, they can point to definite numbers. You know, we educated this number, this is what they've gone on to do. We have eradicated this disease. We've made this progress. We've cured this many people, or we feed this many people. And, you know, so there are some which have an easier case to make, and their reach is, you know, is further. Their impact is more obvious, and their reaches, they reach further in terms of their mission. So that's going to be attractive.
Does that need to be part of the dialogue and discussion that professional fundraisers are learning, and should this be part of the training that when you ask for a gift, you need to have some capacity to report on whatever it is that you're going to report on, and that this is, as you're identifying as a global trend, is part of the mix for fundraising in the future?
Oh, absolutely. Fundraising in the future and right now. So I think that a lot of nonprofits get it, and they are measuring or trying to find ways to measure what they do. You know, nonprofit management education, fundraising education is looking at this. How do you use data? How do you collect information? How do you tell the story in a way that illustrates the impact? So how do you communicate that information when you have it? How do you get the information? How do you present it? How do you communicate it to potential supporters?
And to think about that as part of your own pitch for funding, that we are impactful and we know how we are impactful.
Absolutely. I think we undersell ourselves, I think, to a large degree, in terms of the impact that we have, just because we haven't looked at it, we haven't measured it, and oftentimes we don't have anything as simple as a bottom line to point to for success. We need to make the case. We need to make the case for
right.
ourselves.
Well, things like in the YouTube clip, you know, we have people sleeping on the street, and now they have a place to sleep.
Yes.
And you know, we can point to the impact of what that means to someone to not have to sleep on the street tonight.
Absolutely.
But you have to measure it, and you have to count it, and you have to know. And I think you're right that impact measurement can become quite onerous, and it can become an issue where you're counting just to count, and are you really counting the impact, or are you filing a report? But I also think that a lot of nonprofit organizations, to be fair to the donor, go on the principle that we're good people and we do good work and you should give us money to support that good work, and have never really taken the time to think about why we do this work. Should we be doing this work? Are we good at this?
Are we the best to be doing this?
Right. My point.
To address the problem. I'm sorry.
You're absolutely
ahead.
Right. No, you're absolutely right. What I was going to say is, you know, for a lot of organizations that I've provided counsel to over the years, one of the trends that I've seen is that a lot of nonprofits exist out of habit.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One of my pet peeves with the nonprofits that I work with is they often want to center their fundraising around an anniversary. We've been around for 50 years. And I tell them, that's a nice statement perhaps about stability, but, you know, who cares? You know, who cares if you've been around 50 years? What have you been doing
right.
during those 50 years? So,
right. What have
you
done?
Not,
tell that story.
What have you done?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell that story. No, you know, happy
yeah.
birthday, but happy anniversary, but no one, you know, no one really cares.
Yeah. I provided counsel to a charity once. It was so impressive that was helping children, basically helping children with their homework, helping keep them off the streets. And they had gotten so good at measuring and understanding the impact of keeping, in this case, it was young men off the street, that they were literally able to show the effect on incarceration.
Yes.
effect of incarceration in their town, for sort of heading off that trend of a young man getting himself into trouble, getting in with the wrong people, and just spiraling out of control, and that there is a point at which they could absolutely show that if you support this program and we're able to affect more lives, this saves X dollars because this young man is not going to spend 10 or 15 years in prison.
Exactly.
And that's the kind of thing that's very hard to get at, but you don't get at it if you don't try.
Right.
You know, what is the impact of a child care center on a family where maybe the mom or the dad simply cannot keep a job if they don't have child care? What's the effect on that family and then on the community to not have that family now living on welfare or in poverty because they were able to get a job and keep a job? That's the kind of impact. It doesn't have to be, you know, earth-shattering sort of thing. It really can be family by family. It can be person by person. But part of that, so I was really glad to see that you identified that, because I think that is a trend, but it doesn't have to be a trend at just the super wealthy level. It doesn't have to be a trend just at the global level.
Oh, absolutely not. I think every donor would like to see the impact that their dollars make.
And that's your point of, don't tell me that you're 50 years old. Tell me how many lives you affected over 50 years, the difference that you made in this community. I often, when I provide counsel, when I do sort of a board and staff retreat, is I'll challenge them with a couple of things that don't sound like they're that earth-shattering, but will absolutely leave boards of directors stone cold. And I'll just say, you know, XYZ organization, the name of that organization, and I'll just stand there and I'll say, so what?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just kind of let it hang out there. I'll say, so what? So what? You exist. So what? You have a budget. So what? You have a building. If you had to close this organization on Monday, who's shedding the crocodile tears? Who sees that you're not here? Though that's your impact. You know, the people who notice that the doors didn't close, the people who, you know, and not just your employees who you're paying salary to, but what are the lives that you're affecting? Who are you teaching? Who are you training? Who are you saving? Who, whatever. What is the difference that you make?
Mm-hmm.
So in identifying that as a trend, you're saying that's global. That's not just here in the United States or even in, you know, maybe more Western culture, but this is something that is becoming hard baked into philanthropists.
Yes, it is. I think that every philanthropist everywhere would like to see the outcome of their philanthropy, and they are, you know, in many cases they are successful business people, wildly successful business people, and they are very, you know, can be, they do have the philanthropic impulse, but they can also be quite hard-nosed in terms of where they're going to put those philanthropic dollars. They do see it as an investment.
As an investment, right. So impact is part of investment. So what am I going to get? What will my business get? What will my employees get? What will my community get if we invest in whatever it is that you do? And is that a fair question?
I think it is a fair question. It's one I ask myself when I am making a gift. I want to give it to the organization that's going to steward it best. So the one who's going to put my money, my hard-earned money, to best uses.
Well, now you're bringing up a very important but very different topic that I'm wondering what you're seeing globally in terms of the trust factor of nonprofits and NGOs.
Good question. Well, I think that everywhere across the board we're seeing less trust in institutions. So government, religious organizations, you know, they say they've been seeing fall-offs in some of the civic associations like, you know, we used to have the Elks Club and so forth, and we don't see that as much anymore. So there's sort of a fall-off in trust in institutions, including nonprofits, that's sort of across the board. And there's some countries and regions which struggle with it more. For instance, in China, transparency has been a challenge. They've had some scandals, large-scale scandals in the NGO sector, which have really affected the way Chinese people feel about giving. And
in
so,
Latin America as well.
Yes, yes. So there are places where they struggle with it more. And then I think just across the board, there's less trust in institutions. And as I said, some of the major philanthropists are not giving, they don't give to organizations, they give to causes for purpose. So they're, in some instances, bypassing the middleman, which is the nonprofit. So that is the fallout effect of that lesser trust in society in general.
Yeah. I want to just get to an email question that that we received here. We've got about 10 minutes left. John from St. Louis, clearly, or at least suggesting that he has your book or heard your global trends earlier, wanted to ask you to elaborate on the impact of social media.
Well, this impact of social media is huge, and that is one of the trends that we see. That there's not complete agreement about how it affects us, but it certainly has. I mean, we're seeing, just across the board, we're seeing that social media is drawing us all together and making it a smaller world in some respects. So this plays into philanthropy because, you know, people, young people today, they've grown up in a world where they have easy access to their peers in Tunisia or Brazil or other places around the world. So there's a different sense of community. You know, we talked, Ted, earlier about giving to community. So is it your, is that your hometown or is that the world? So I think there is a sense of growing awareness and connection with the world, which is impacting philanthropy, and that has been created by social media. And I also think that it certainly affects the ways that we raise money. You know, we've seen it with online giving. I mean, you wrote a book about it, Ted.
Yes, exactly.
You wrote a book about it. We've seen it with online giving. We're seeing, you know, Give by Sell, you know, what the Red Cross has done with that. And, you know, use of various avenues and viral fundraising, as we saw last summer with the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Right. Well, yeah. those truly tend to be global kind of activities. But is the basis of this? And I'm just wondering, as we're watching the time here, it just seems to me that a lot of these trends are leading back to one common thread around the world, and that is that the demand of philanthropy is that it be more individual. That there are not truly groups of donors who move in a particular section or particular way, that it seems to me that charities are more, or donors are more interested in causes and in outcomes than they are necessarily a particular charity, whereas fundraisers are still very focused on an organization with a budget. And are those necessarily trends that are moving in the same direction?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I think some have been quick to see the change and have gotten on board, have wisened up, so to speak, but others less so. So I think that's very true. I mean, some have lagged behind in terms of their response to this changing environment and a changing donor.
Is part of your book, because I think your book, to be fair, is a celebration of philanthropy around the world, but is there an undertone to your book of sort of a cautionary tale that this is of such importance that you must factor it in, regardless of size of organization or where you may be in the world, you must factor this into your long-term strategy if, in fact, you may risk survival?
Absolutely, I think it is. It's a celebration, and it's a warning. It is a caution because the world is changing dramatically, and the world that I grew up in, that you grew up in, is no more. And we have to adapt to our changing role in the order of nations. We have to look at the emergence of new centers of wealth, and there's just huge seismic shifts going on. And if we don't pay attention, we're going to be lost.
And that again is almost regardless of size. I suppose there's some very small nonprofits that have very modest needs that are truly local and may not be affected by this. But, you know, you say that, and then the local company that you've been relying on for donations gets bought up by some multinational and is no longer interested in your community, and now you've just been affected.
Absolutely. Just as I said, that fundraiser I sat next to on the plane a few days ago who said that one of the donors had jumped ship, saying just that, when actually, as we talked a bit, it became apparent that they really had a global case to make, and they just hadn't yet put it together.
Donor did them a favor.
Yeah, the donor may have done them a favor, may have given them a wake-up call, but, I think that they had just never looked at it, and it was there. They had a global case.
Penelope, just to share very quickly with my readers, I do, or my listeners today, I do want to make note of a couple of things. One is the show will be on podcast next week and then back live in 2 weeks with a very important topic. I think you'll agree. We're going to have Gabe Cohen and, or actually, we're going to have Susan Schaefer and Bob Whitting here with Nonprofit Board Service as our topic. So that's very important. And then I just have couple of very quick reminders for everyone, and then we're going to come back and wrap up the show with Penelope Cagney.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. Click on Radio Links. If you're listening live today, the phone lines are open. Call in and ask a question by dialing 347-324-3080. Now, back to the Nonprofit Coach with Ted Hart.
And we're live here with Penelope Cagney and her really terrific book, which we've just both agreed is both a celebration of global philanthropy, but also a cautionary tale to fundraisers and nonprofit organizations who might fail to heed this global trends that are so artfully outlined in this book. We do now have a little over 3 minutes left. I'd like to accomplish two things with you, Penelope, if we could. Your closing remarks in terms of what you think the impact of this book is, but also how can my listeners reach you?
Well, your listeners can reach me at my email address, which is P-C-A-G-N-E-Y, P-Cagney, at The Cagney Company. Like one word, thecagneycompany.com. I'm very happy to hear from them and answer questions if I can. And my final words would be, you know, Ted, I think you summed it up well. I think we have a lot to celebrate. We have so much that we have gained by this growth in philanthropy around the world. But we also, particularly us in North America, we need to wake up and we need to be paying attention or we are going to be we're not going to reap all the benefits that this new world offers us.
So the straight trend line of fundraising may truly be affected by these global trends.
Absolutely.
Penelope, thank you for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach. Of course, you're always welcome back anytime you have something new or you just want to come and share your wisdom with us. I think this is a very important topic and one that you have rightfully won the 2015 AFP Skystone Ryan Partners Award in Research for Global Fundraising, How the World is Changing the Rules of Philanthropy. As I just mentioned, we will be back live here in 2 weeks. So next week is a terrific week to get caught up on the hundreds of podcasts now available always for free 24 hours a day at tedhart.com. We'll be live back here on April 21st. Penelope, thank you for joining us here on the Nonprofit Coach.
Thank you,
Ted.
You've been listening to the Nonprofit Coach Radio Show with Ted Hart. Tell all your friends to check out our production schedule and download our iPod and iPad-friendly podcasts at tedhart.com. Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Coach.